Brightest audience in Colorado, in Denver, in Colorado, in the nation, and around the world. I am not Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. I'm Doug McBurney, honored to sit in again for Bob. It appears Bob continues to recover from an acute case of dyictophobia. Dyictophobia. It's pretty rare. It's a fear of not being able to go fishing. It's very rare. And well, the course of treatment is going well. And well, we wish Bob all the best. Now, I want to open up by explaining my Broncos prediction, okay, from last week. I made the bold prediction that the Broncos would be defeated by the San Diego Padres. Or, no, not the Padres. What's the San Diego's football team with the lightning bolt? The Chargers. I apologize. My knowledge of football has slipped since Tim Tebow's not in the league anymore. I just don't follow it anymore. Anyway, I made that prediction, and I want to explain to all the Broncos fans that I may have offended. If you were offended, feel free to call. We're at 1-800-836-9278. That's 1-800-8-ENYARD. If you want to call and express your discontent for me making a prediction against your Denver Broncos. But I want to explain myself before you call and give me too hard of a time. Remember that I mentioned that about half my predictions fail. It's been an algorithm throughout my life. About half of them fail. Well, on January 7th, the day before I predicted against the Broncos, just by chance, I had predicted that gold would close at about $1,233. And if you go back and check the record, I nailed it. So I knew that there was about 100% chance that whatever prediction I made about the Broncos game would fail. Because I had nailed that gold prediction, just nailed it. And so to all the Broncos fans who may have been offended, I just want to let you know that I was actually making a prediction in order to help your Broncos defeat the Chargers, which they were barely able to pull off, but they did pull off this Sunday past. And so now that my Broncos prediction has failed, and I've made no other predictions since then, I will now predict that the Patriots will defeat the Denver Broncos 45-38. This coming Sunday. And I hope everybody's with me on this. My last prediction failed. So this prediction would be... So I need to switch that if I don't want to make the Broncos fans angry. I apologize. I predict that the Denver Broncos will defeat the New England Patriots 45-38. That's my prediction for this coming Sunday. And if you have any thoughts on the matter, just keep them to yourselves because I have a lot of stuff that I've got to get to. I want to remind everyone that the annual March for Life is coming up. It's this coming Saturday, January 18th at 1 p.m. on the west steps of the Capitol. You can go to ColoradoRightToLife.com, get all the information. Be sure to show up there, 1 o'clock, the March for Life. Stand up alongside other normal, rational people. These aren't heroes. These aren't anyone special. They're just people who don't believe that there should be legalized, regulated murder of innocent people. That's all. We're not that impressive a lot. That's all. We're just asking that you don't legalize the murder of innocent people. That's really not an earth-shattering view to hold, I don't think. If you disagree, hang up the phone. Keep it to yourself. I really don't need to hear about it. So what I do want to talk about today, of course, we do want to do an entire rundown of the Golden Globes. So definitely, if you want to call in on that, just light up the phones right now. I know that Bob Enyart's audience is attuned to the Golden Globes every year, and I know that you expect a detailed rundown on the show the morning after, the day after the Golden Globes. So, of course, we have all that will be coming to you shortly. Also, I saw a story that General Motors is announcing the release of a 265-horsepower Corvette. Now, that's actually an interesting story. 265 horsepower. So if you want to talk about that, we will not be covering that. We got the Southwest Airlines pilot that landed at the wrong airport, maybe in the wrong state. Southwest just released an official announcement. They don't know what happened. So they're known as a bargain airline, bargain discount airline, a cut rate airline. But to not know how your plane ended up in Missouri, well, I don't know. I just don't know if I'll be flying Southwest in the near future. And then, of course, there's the A-Rod scandal. We've got in-depth coverage of the A-Rod scandal with interviews with everyone who ever sold him steroids or gave him those gummy bears with the human growth hormone. Did you hear about that? He was chewing on gummy bears with, I don't know, something in there. Anyway, I saw an interview with the guy last night who was injecting him and giving him the gummy bears with the human growth hormone. And he said, you know, I gotta say, he was... They basically asked him what he thought about this whole scandal and did he feel guilty. And he said, you know, I thought if you look at the 3 years that I was taking care of A-Rod, he said, I had about the perfect mix of drugs. You got to admit that. I mean, the guy was, he was fairly proud of himself. No, we're not going to be covering A-Rod. Now, and I've explained my Broncos prediction, and I've predicted that the Broncos will win 45-38. It'll be a high-scoring affair, I do believe. With Tom Brady and all that. We do want to congratulate John Fox and John Elway for managing to get the Broncos basically back to where they were right before they fired Tim Tebow. They won one game in the playoffs. Congratulations, guys. Very impressive. So you know how I feel about the Broncos. The Broncos are dead to me. They're dead to me. And I like, who's their quarterback now? The guy with the, with his father was famous? Archie Manning. Archie Manning was the father, right? And then he has two sons who are NFL quarterbacks. One of them plays here in Denver, and his name is Peyton, right? Peyton Manning. I like Peyton Manning personally. It's just unfortunately that he has to play for the Broncos. They're dead to me. But they will win this weekend, 45-38, next Sunday, this next big football game. All right, now, we'll get to some news of the day, some serious news. I've got an update on a justice story that Bob and I discussed maybe a month ago. You remember the story of the man in Tampa, Florida, who had gone on trial for tricking his pregnant ex-girlfriend into taking abortifacient pills. Do you all remember this story? Well, the judge has found him guilty. He has been found guilty for tricking his girl. Well, he hasn't been found guilty of tricking his girlfriend into taking an abortifacient. He's been found guilty for, well, exactly what he was charged with, tampering with a consumer product and conspiracy to commit mail fraud. And he killed an innocent baby. And he's been, now the judge has delayed the sentencing because the judge says that he has some concerns over whether or not the pill may have caused the miscarriage that occurred in the death of the innocent child. And being a U.S. district judge, this judge doesn't know what to do with information like that. He's completely confused. He had it all in order when it came down to consumer product, tampering with a consumer product, and conspiracy to commit mail fraud. He could figure out how to sentence for that. But now he thinks maybe this guy killed an innocent child, and the judge doesn't know what to do. So he's put the sentencing, he's delayed it, and he's going to go back and read through his law books and try to figure out what should a judge do with someone who's been convicted of killing another person. Judges these days, they really don't know what to do. And U.S. District Judge Richard A. Lazara, he's a lawyer. He doesn't know what to do. So he's going to reconsult. May have to go back to law school to try to figure out what to do. All right. Now, let's go on into the war file. This is from China. This is from the Washington Times. Apparently, China's military has just conducted a test of a new high-speed missile vehicle. And the aim of the vehicle is to deliver warheads through any missile defense system. You know, like the one that we've been working on here. Are we still working on that? We're not really working on that anymore. Somebody needs to get a memo to the Chinese that Barry Ho has abandoned the missile defense shield. They could spend their money elsewhere, you know, like on decent roads instead of investing in high-speed, ultra-supersonic missiles. This is interesting stuff. This hypersonic craft that China allegedly has tested is designed to be launched atop an ICBM. That's an intercontinental ballistic missile, for those of you who matriculated in the government schools. This vehicle then it then glides and maneuvers at top speeds of 10 times the speed of sound, which would be 7,000 some odd miles an hour. 7,000 miles an hour? Wow. That's kind of scary. And it basically moves at that speed in a near space, almost in orbit. And then once it gets over its target, well, then it does the dive bomb. And but we don't have anything to worry about with that. So we'll just move along. There's nothing to see here, ladies and gentlemen. Just move along. What I really wanted to talk about today, now that I've wasted approximately a third of the show, what I really want to talk today about is marriage, the state of marriage and the state of the family, because I know that's what you're really interested in, maybe even more than the Broncos game coming up, maybe. So I want to start a story out of Paris. This is from the Daily Mail. The First Lady of France has been hospitalized with depression after she found out that her husband, communist François Hollande, is having an affair. Yeah, she's in the hospital. She's depressed. François Hollande, who's the hero of the socialist communist left, has been having an affair with an actress. Shock. A French politician? No. Surely someone's making this up. Now, I joke about it, but it's really not a joke. Now, the French media, they think that the First Lady, that she's faking it, that she's not really depressed, that she knows that he's been cheating on her, and this is all just an act, because, I don't know, that's what French politicians do. They act. But she's in the hospital for depression, and there was a poll that was taken by a French newspaper after this news came out that the Prime Minister of France is a philanderer cheating on his wife. After the news came out, a newspaper polled the average French citizen, in fact, a whole bunch of them. And according to the poll, a vast majority of French people want the President Hollande to separate from his wife. Now that the affair's become public knowledge, well, the public in France says, well, obviously what they need to do is they need to separate. By the way, if they were to separate, excuse me, you're not supposed to cough on the air. All right, well, I got that out. All right, I think a moth was flying around the studio, and I breathed it directly into my left lung. All right. So, what is this lady's name here? Valerie Trevelyan. That's the president of communist François Hollande. If they were to separate, she would be replaced by a 41-year-old actress named Julia. That's the girl that the French president's been having an affair with. I apologize. I said prime minister earlier, and I meant the president. I don't even know what difference that makes over there in France. President, prime minister. I'm not familiar with that whole parliamentary system. I'm not so sure I approve. And I certainly disapprove of the French president cheating on his wife. I think she is depressed because even when you're living in the lofty heights of power and you find out that you're being cheated on, it's a shameful thing and it's hurtful. And I think she's depressed. And I think that's why she's in the hospital. So the affair was made public on Friday, and by Saturday morning, 70% of the French people are saying, yeah, he should get rid of her. And so that's the state of marriage over there in Europe. It's not as serious an institution as it once was. The institution of marriage has been steadily under attack for, let me think, well, my entire lifetime, as far as I know. It's been under attack, and it's being the war on marriage is being won by the enemies of God. And I have some evidence of that. Because the war on marriage, it doesn't just destabilize a marriage here and a marriage there. The war on marriage destabilizes the family, and it actually destroys families and destroys children. The disrespect for the institution of marriage, the dilution of the institution of marriage with hedonistic lust, it destroys families. And eventually it can even destroy a nation. And take into account Japan. Listen to what's happening in Japan. I asked myself, what does the destruction of marriage and the family mean in real terms, in real life? Well, I got a story from theweek.com reporting on Japan. They now have one of the lowest fertility rates in the world. And at the same time, they have one of the highest longevity rates. And for those of you who matriculated in the government schools, that means that people live a long time there. The population in Japan is dropping rapidly, and it's becoming increasingly weighted toward older people. The population there is on a path to decline by about 1 million people a year. Starting this year, 1 million people a year. By 2060, the Japanese government estimates that there will be just 87 million people in Japan, and nearly half of them will be over 65. That is a disaster waiting to happen. It's an utter disaster, a demographic catastrophe. And theweek.com reports that without a dramatic change in either the birth rate or Japan's restrictive immigration policies, Japan simply won't have enough workers to support its retirees and will enter a demographic death spiral. And the prime minister over there, he's been made aware of this. There have been studies and, well, he's just been paying attention to what's going on. He's been encouraging Japanese people to have more children. He's even made speeches about it. He's even given the whole country the day off work just to procreate, to try to save his country. But The Week reports that the babies just aren't coming. And they go on to report about what has happened to young people in Japan since marriage. Well, the traditional means of getting married in Japan has been declared passé and patriarchal and not politically incorrect by the global pop culture. Because in Japan, even up until about the 1970s, arranged marriages were the norm. Most marriages were facilitated by families and employers, and marriage was not really considered a romantic endeavor in Japan, in Japanese culture. It was actually more about duty and helping to support one's community, one's family. And, well, that's all been dubbed and deemed passé by the global pop culture. And so Japanese men, they have no cultural background in how to go find a wife. It's just always been handled by mom and dad and your boss and maybe your professor at school. And so Japanese men, they just don't have the wherewithal to know how to go look for a wife. So guess what's happened? They're not getting married. And this report says there's a subset now of Japanese youth who have just withdrawn from dating, and many who've withdrawn from even leaving their parents' house ever. They got a story in here about one kid. All he does is play video games all day, and he eats from a tray that his mother leaves outside of his door. This is the real destruction of real human beings that's happened because the idea of marriage as a sacred institution has been undermined and destroyed. And it ruins kids. Now, what do young Japanese men do now? They stay home and they focus on online pornography and games like Nintendo's Love Plus. Are you familiar with this game? Not familiar? No, I'm not surprised. It's a game in which players conduct a relationship with an anime girlfriend. That's a cartoon girlfriend. So that's what young Japanese boys and teenagers and even young men are doing now. They report that hundreds of thousands of young men are known as hikikomori, which means basically a shut-in, someone who eschews human contact, and they spend their days playing video games, reading comic books in their parents' houses. And the marriage rate in Japan has plummeted unbelievable. By 2005, in a recent poll, 60% of women and 72% of men had never been married. It's a catastrophe for their society. Nobody's getting married. They're playing video games. This is what the attack on the sacred institution, the God-ordained institution of marriage, this is the kind of destruction that it wreaks in real life. Let's see. The government in Japan has even gone so far as to launch a program to try to reach out to young men who won't leave their parents' house. They send out outreach counselors, female outreach counselors, to go knock on these boys' doors and try to coax them out of their room. And the counselors are known as rental sisters. Yeah, they send a rental sister over to try to help the young boys that. And I can tell you, if I've been to Japan on an occasion or two. I found a wife in Japan. I feel kind of guilty now. Some poor guy in Japan. I took the only chance he ever had at getting a wife. I apologize. Tough luck for him, right? Anyway, Japanese culture is inundated with pornography. I know we think it's bad here because, you know, you go to watch the Broncos game and you can't really watch it with your kids because the commercials are, well, they're borderline pornography. But go to Japan and the social acceptability of gross pornography is, well, it's everywhere. And pornography undermines marriage, it undermines the family, it undermines the ability for people to have real relationships. And this is the social price tag of pornography. And pornography also leads to the casting aside of all mores. And so anything goes, and when anything goes, the good and what's right and what's lovely and what is edifying is always the first to go when anything goes. So that's what's happening. And it's real. These poor kids in Japan have been abused. And I know this is going on in America. It simply hasn't reached the point where it's a genuine cultural phenomenon yet. But it's happening. It's absolutely happening, and it's terrifying to think about the future of civilization with all that. Now, what has happened here in America, if you've been paying attention, the government and the pop culture, and the courts and the judges and the lawyers, they have been attacking the American family again for my entire lifetime. I've got a story here on the war on poverty from WorldNet Daily. It's been 50 years since Lyndon Johnson first announced the war on poverty. Do you remember that? 1964, poverty was going to be eliminated. Lyndon Johnson declared it from the White House, and off they went. Well, it turns out, WorldNet Daily reports, that the very people who were supposed to be helped by all this government spending and social programs, it turns out 50 years later that they have become the victims of the war on poverty. And this is according to Cheryl Lynn Harley LeBon. She's a co-chairman of Project 21, which is a leadership network of black conservatives. So we're 50 years on from the war on poverty. And how much has been spent? Is it $1 trillion? I believe it's somewhere in the neighborhood of $1 trillion. That's a one with a lot of zeros after it. The poverty rate in January of 1964 was 19%. Currently, the poverty rate in the United States is 15%. So $1 trillion has bought us a 4% decrease in relative poverty. And so many fiscal conservatives, they would be upset about that and say, well, we've wasted all this money. It's been a bad way to spend the money. It's been a bad investment. And I agree. I agree with that. But that's the least of the problems with the war on poverty. Listen to what Mrs. LeBon has to say. She says, I find it a very curious coincidence that the issues that started to plague the black community, and I think the war on poverty, they basically held up poor little white kids from Appalachia and poor little black kids from Chicago. And Lyndon Johnson said, these are the kids that we're going to help, right? Well, Ms. LeBon reports that the issues that started to plague the black community, higher incarceration rates, drug use, the explosive rise in single unwed mothers all started to plague the black community in the 1960s, which coincided with the development of the war on poverty and the social programs associated with it. And these very same problems still plague the black community as these public assistance programs get larger and larger, and the government steals ever more money from me and you and our neighbors to allegedly help lift these poor people out of poverty. But what they've done is they've destroyed the black family, and they've done a pretty good job of destroying the white family and the yellow family and the brown family. And if there's any other color family out there, the war on poverty has gone a long way toward the destruction of those families. Now, Cheryl Lynn Harley Laban of Project 21, she says she believes that the leftists had good intentions. And see, that's where I part company with Mrs. Laban. I don't think they had good intentions. I think their intentions all along were to, you know, people always ask, why do people do what they do? And my pastor, Bob Enyard of Denver Bible Church, which you should come down and visit us any given Sunday. Go to the internet, denverbiblechurch.com. You can find out where we are and come on down and visit us. Worship the Lord with us. My pastor, Bob Enyard, who normally hosts the show, who I'm sitting in for today, he says if you trace any one of these social, cultural problems, any criminal act, everybody wants to know why, it can always be traced to someone rebelling against God. And that's why I disagree with Ms. Laban that the leftists had good intentions. She says they had good intentions, but their efforts only made the problem worse. No, they did not have good intentions. Their intent was to rebel against the order set up by the living God, the Creator. And their intentions have borne much bad fruit. Their intentions worked exactly as they were designed. What they wanted to do was rebel against God, destroy the family, engage in sexual licentiousness and theft, and achieve political power by creating a permanent underclass that would be beholden to them and who they would vote for. By the way, Marco Rubio has a big idea to fix this. Marco Rubio says what we need to do is shift the burden from the federal government to the states. That Marco Rubio all the way. What an idiot. Does he think the state is going to be any better at replacing the father than the federal government? Marco Rubio, what happened to this guy? Anyway, Ms. Laban says what the local government needs to do is do everything possible to attract business, encourage business so that they can create jobs and help save the communities. And, well, she's closer than Marco Rubio is. But the only way this problem can be solved is for the preachers, the pastors, to stand up in the pulpits, and the priests and everyone else to stand up and tell people that the government should not take the place of God, and God has ordained the family to take care of the family and not the government. Come out to the March of Life, folks, March for Life this Saturday, west steps of the Capitol, 1 o'clock. And until then, do right and risk the consequences.